Power Unleashed, Hamburg, 1943. The clue that allowed the new German radar sets to be found and set in motion the events that led to Faraday's invisible waves being used for immense destruction seemed innocent enough. It appeared in an 8-page typewritten document that had been sent by an anonymous German citizen to the British naval attaché in Oslo in 1939. The report seemed too outlandish to be true, for it described activities beyond anything Britain had contemplated. There were accounts of a science fiction-like research establishment on a distant Baltic island where jet-propelled glider-shaped planes were built, along with descriptions of not just one but two radar systems far more advanced than anything Britain had. When the packet was translated and distributed in London, only one individual thought it worth keeping. That individual, however, was Reginald V. Jones, a very young-looking 28-year-old. Although his official training was in astronomy and physics, he had done graduate work at Balliol College, Oxford, where a broad literary background was expected, and it was taught that every received opinion deserved to be questioned. He recognized that Nazi administrators were so suspicious of one another that it was quite possible, as indeed turned out to be true, that several German research teams had been working on radar without the main Luftwaffe officials being aware of it. Now, in 1941, he realized that Germany did have a functional radar system, and, from reading accounts of prisoner conversations and radio intercepts, he also knew that it was codenamed Freya. To someone of his background, this codename carried a clue that would be as revealing of German intentions as if a carrier pigeon with the true information had been sent direct to the Office of Air Intelligence, Whitehall, London SW1. Jones strolled from his Whitehall offices accordingly, one day late in 1941, to Charing Cross Road, the center of London's book trade. Before the day was out, he had found what he wanted. Freya was an ancient Norse goddess who was described as being usually in the company of Heimdall, another mythological being. Freya had a necklace, and Heimdall's job was to guard it. To do this, he was given the power to see 100 miles in all directions, by day or night. RAF reconnaissance flights had already found some installations in occupied France that looked as if they could be radar sites, but the devices had seemed too large and old-fashioned to be the cause of the most accurate interceptions now. No one, however, had thought there might be two machines with different powers working together. The reference to Old Norse mythology, where Heimdall and Freya worked together, made Jones think that this might be what the German command was now building. Jones sent a camera-equipped Spitfire fighter back to the first big site that had been found, a few dozen miles from Le Havre, near the town of Brunevoll. It was highly polished for top speed, and it roared in just a few hundred feet from the ground to keep down the amount of time that guards or anti-aircraft guns would have to try to fire at it. As soon as the negatives were back in London, Air Ministry photo interpreters got to work. At first, they saw only the troop emplacements and barbed wire barriers and the commandeered chateau that would be expected at an ordinary base, but a closer look with magnifying glasses revealed that where a path away from the chateau stopped short, there was indeed yet another radar device tucked into a clearing no more than a few yards wide. This was worse than expected. A radar set small enough to fit in this clearing couldn't have the huge antennae that Britain's chain home radars required. Instead, the photo suggested that the German engineers had produced a radar with waves that wiggled out at 5 feet or perhaps even less in length. The entire device could fit on the back of a van, with a single yard-wide steerable antenna on top to generate and receive its waves. Since the chain home antennas were the size of very tall electricity pylons, it would have taken hundreds of cubic yards to rotate them, and no engine known could easily do that. No one in Britain knew how Germany had achieved this feat of engineering. If there were more of these sets, and if they were crammed aboard a plane, then German patrols could identify vulnerable American troop transports coming to Britain, even in darkness in the middle of the ocean, and send that information to waiting U-boats. Individual Luftwaffe fighters could pick out Allied planes in total darkness as well. Two volunteers from the French resistance, Roger Dumont and Charles Chaveau, went in to investigate the base and its small, deadly radar. They found more than 100 German troops and at least 15 machine gun emplacements. The Royal Navy couldn't get up there to examine or capture the radar, codenamed Würzburg, for although the chateau at Brunevoll was on the coast, the sea had cut cliffs nearly 400 feet high in the soft chalk. It had to be attacked, and since there were no landing strips, one of the newly formed paratrooper units would have to go in. And that was how Charles W. Cox, a peacetime film projectionist, amateur radio ham, and now most junior sergeant in the Royal Air Force, came to be instructed one February day early in 1942 to report to the Air Ministry in London. Air Vice Marshal Victor Tate was waiting for him. Normally, Cox tried to spend the day in carpet slippers. He had corns on his feet, and he tended to keep up his trousers with insulating wire rather than a belt. But today, he realized, was special, and he tried to dress properly. "You volunteered for a dangerous job, Sergeant Cox," Tate said. "No, sir," Cox protested. "What do you mean, no, sir?" Tate asked. "I never volunteered for anything, sir," Cox said.